We're going to continue talking with John Hoag about the Hopi prophecy, of course, his work, predictions for the last blood moon. And, of course, we will also, of course, take your phone calls when we come back. Okay, back with you on Coast to Coast, John Hoag with us. John, before I get into your thoughts on the presidential elections and the push, the last blood moon is going to be September 28th. So what does that mean based on Hopi prophecy?
Well, in general, Hopi prophecies, as the book will show, most of the final warnings have happened. So it's now a question of, all right, we've crossed the threshold, it looks like. Now, any time now, we should start seeing the great purification unravel over our world. And I would say you just have to walk out and look up into the sky, read your temperature gauge, look at the general temperature readings for the whole world and see how the temperatures are spiking like never before. Try not to go to your backyard if you're in the northeastern states of the United States, like last winter and especially again this coming winter, when it's cold and stormy and you think, what global warming is going on? Go and see the maps that are out there showing a yearly change in climate to the hotter, and you'll find that your little corner of the world is one of the few little cold spots that everywhere else, like when people were saying to me, people in Boston were saying, you know, where's the global warming, Mr. Hoag? You know, here we're under feet of snow. And my response, which is also a response to about 4 million Washingtonians, is where's the snow on our mountains? Where did our winter go? Because we didn't have one this year. It all went over to, so these cold pockets are like the shivers of a coming fever over the world's climate. And to me, that's telling me that the Hopi prophecy of the purification has begun. We are now in the temperature tsunamis that, and now the question then is, what do we do? We have the Paris meeting of the world leaders that's happening in November through December this year. And it's really a last chance for the human race and its leaders to actually get real about what the temperature controls have to be, with binding laws that do have teeth that have to curtail the carbon emissions that are creating this destabilization of our only planet atmosphere that we have to breathe. And the astrology of that period is like you couldn't pick a worse time to bring people together, astrologically speaking, to sort this out. But that doesn't mean when the stars are against you that you can't get through it. In fact, sometimes when the stars are against you, that's when people, challenged by the friction in their lives and their astrologically difficult lives, they actually find ways to really forge things out. I mean, that's, I've got right. some things in my own chart that I shouldn't have lived past 21, but here I still am. You know, so
these are all fixable then, aren't they?
It is. Nothing is written in stone. There's only an effort. It only appears like it's written in stone. It's one of the most erroneous things I've ever experienced in all these years of studying prophecies of the world and world traditions, this belief that there is inevitability. In fact, in the Blood Moon book, I suddenly moved the whole book to kind of another level that I didn't expect when I was writing it, and wrote this essay about inevitability. I think it's one of the most important things I've written in the 33 books I've written. And it really talks about how wrong, how fundamentally unsupported it is by the dynamism of life. And so I hope your listeners will check it out. There is no inevitability. It only looks that way, and habit and conditioning and stupidity that's kind of been imposed upon us by our societies in the guise of religion, in the guise of politics, in the guise of belief systems, try very, very hard to make us so robotic and predictable that it looks like it's preordained. But I bear witness to it not being preordained. So there are ways to fix it, and even the hardest aspects, even something like the blood moon coming on the 28th. What's important about the blood moon of the 28th for me is how many of the last four, many of these four blood moons of our modern time, from 2014 to 2015, one related to the beginning of the Cold War. That's very dangerous for our future.
Yeah, interesting.
The first crisis coming in late 2017, and the new president, whoever this president's going to be, they're going to perhaps face a Cuban Missile Crisis with Russia in 2017. So that's Blood Moon 1. The other three, including this final one, hover around the evolution of this peace deal, this 11th hour attempt to stop what the prophecies indicate would be a disastrous war in the Middle East that would unravel the oil production systems of the world, plunge the world into a deep depression, and would not solve anything, would actually make things worse. War is not an option that will bear fruit in this situation.
What a roller coaster it's going to be, Joe.
So you see the 28th, by the time the 28th moon glowers, the U.S. Congress will have decided whether to vote in favor of ratification of this agreement, as has the Security Council and the United Nations already done, or not. And how that will affect the United Nations if it's not ratified. Now, I've been saying that in predictions 2015-2016, which is a two-year look at the events that happen in this year and next year that basically define the next 30 years of human future history, I've been saying, hold your breath about peace, because the forces that are driven unconsciously and conditioned in the people on all sides, the Christian leaders in the West, the Jewish leaders in Israel, and the Iranian leaders, there is an underpinning of apocalyptic fever where they all deep down think that their apocalypse will happen and they will be victorious in this struggle. And this irrational kind of thinking, which is not even in the conscious surface of a lot of our leaders, it's kind of wired into our societies, is a very dangerous element in this that could accidentally on purpose make peace stumble and war erupt in the Middle East anytime after September, and especially through the spring into the summer of next year.
What we need.
So I've been saying that when this agreement came during the trine of Uranus and Jupiter in June, that it hopefully would be ratified quickly on time on the deadline, because if more time was given to hum and haw about it, that leads it more and more with each day closer to those war stars in September. And look what we've got. They didn't end the peace agreement at the right time. They delayed into July. The 9th of July scheduled meeting for the Congress to debate this was passed, and so Congress had to wait to look at this in September. So now lobbies of war have been given an extra 30 days to 60 days to convince more and more people in the Senate to cross over and vote a veto-proof vote. And if that happens, and then we have the red blood moon over, this is the only one that's shining over Israel and Iran of the four. All the other ones could be seen elsewhere, not over the place where presumably God would want to shine his red moon. That means to me that we're heading for that war with Iran.
I think you're right. Yep. I think you're right, too. So let me ask you quickly, and we'll get to calls. You have said for the last several years on the program, John, that you believe that Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush will face off with each other in the presidential election. Are you still standing by that at this point?
Yes, because, it could change, but it is like I said, nothing is written in stone. And certainly when you've been 12-0, your odds of missing
They keep going up.
Going up and up. But the thing, and it goes against my own personal views too. A lot of what I predict does goes against my own personal politics and understanding of things. But I play the messenger rather than let myself get in the way with it as much as I can. I just can't help shaking this intuition, despite all the monkey wrenches that are going to be thrown by the left and Bernie Sanders camp, from the right, from Donald Trump, that despite all of that, and despite we have a year coming up where a lot of monkey business is going to happen in the political world, and there's a lot of angry people that are not being addressed. I know that some of your guests earlier were saying that Hillary Clinton didn't seem to have a lot of passion in it. I think in her campaign, like she did before, in the last time she tried, I mean, it's very early to say that. I mean, she was about as passionless at the beginning 8 years ago as she is now. And got to remember that in a very tight race with Barack Obama, she actually won more primary votes. If you take all the votes together, more people voted for her to be the Democrat nominee than Obama. But Obama's people handled the caucus rules much better, where they didn't need a lot of votes to take a state. So it's early. It's true what I think your numerologist said about Jeb Bush, that his numerology as well as his stars are very good for 2016. And for those who think that he can't survive into New Hampshire and all that, look, you've got to follow in this time of a plutocracy, because we don't live in a democracy anymore. We lost our democracy when Citizens United was approved by the Supreme Court to make money and corporations, people, and money free speech. We don't live in a democracy anymore. Our republic is a plutocracy now. Yep. And the plutocracy has decided through money who they will pick for us to vote for.
Yes, exactly.
And so I say again and again, follow the money. And the money is on Clinton and Bush.
And they don't care which one wins as long as they both get in.
Yes, exactly. And another random weird element in this, the other moneyed person in this is the rogue corporate man who doesn't have to answer to the oligarchies, and that is Donald Trump. So it's it's up to Trump. In fact, I this weekend I wrote a New Hope Prophecy article where I wrote the introduction to a little book that I'm going to put together and have out before the next Republican debates on CNN on the 16th of September. So it'll be available on Amazon. It'll be basically look at in depth at the astrological possibilities of a Donald Trump presidency and how he might get there. It's a very fascinating chart that he has.
And very possible.
And, you know, he is, if anyone who has taken a somewhat of a deep look into his astrology, it is very shallow to peg him as one thing or another, because this is, and in the essay I talk about this, that I tried to compare Donald Trump as he's a genius in what he does. In his business world, he is one of the great geniuses of real estate and promotion. Whether you like what he says or does or not, that cannot be denied. He is also born a Gemini, and so being a Gemini, he is a man of multiple facets. And he is like often great Gemini geniuses. I compared him to Richard Wagner, the German composer who wrote The Ring and Tristan Isolde, and also had a predilection sometimes to be not misogynistic like Mr. Trump can be with his language, but an anti-Semite. And a man who could write Judaism and music, this terrible diatribe, anti-Semitic diatribe, but then turn around and write Tristan Isolde, which is one of the most sublime operas describing love that expands to a cosmic level. But that is the contradictory nature of great Gemini geniuses, and that they almost need their darker contrasts to bring more contrast of their brilliance. And Donald Trump, though he's not comparable to Wagner as that kind of genius, he is a genius in his own right. And he's also a very maverick, original thinker. The other danger, though, with him is that if I had time, I'd try to contact Stephen King and ask him this question, because what I think is one of the most profoundly interesting fictional works on prophecy is Stephen King's The Dead Zone, which it was also made into a great movie.
Great movie.
Cronenberg as the director and Christopher Walken playing the main character, with Martin Sheen playing another very important character, a man named Greg Stilson, who is a man in the book as well as in the movie who has initially a lot of things that remind me of how Donald Trump is doing his presence.
Do you think Trump would hold a baby up though and block himself with the baby?
No, but you know, wearing the hard hat, you know, being in the book, it gets into more details of how Stilson, no one took him seriously. He was an independent. No one took him seriously. He did a lot of buffoon and stupid things in his campaigns. But he seemed to go unorthodox, and it seemed to work for him. And then suddenly, he became president of the United States. But the problem that I have with the fictional man becoming the true man is if it's Trump, is he's kind of the dark side of this is that he's like a Greg Stilson, and he'll be president during the first of these of the short timelines of the Cold War running out into a thermonuclear crisis. And if his rhetoric is actually how he'll treat Russia and Putin, you know, I'm going to go in there and I'm, you know, the whole, you know,
oh, it's not
what's the matter you kind of New York carnival barker approach, if he really thinks that he can talk to a man with 8,500 nuclear weapons that way, then you just might have a Greg Stilson moment that nobody wanted. Push comes to shove, and
see,
Donald Trump
think
causes World War III as President Trump.
That's I think he would try to befriend Putin and
become
his buddy.
Thing. Here's the thing. Now, I don't want to leave it on the negative potential.
No. 30 seconds before the break, John.
Hmm?
30 seconds before the break.
You look at Trump's chart, and I think it is a lot of bravado. I don't think he'd talk to Putin that way at all. He'd wheel and deal. This is the guy who created The Art of the Deal, one of the definitive books on that.
He'd find a way
to do business with anybody.
You got it. We're going to take the calls as promised when we come right back on Coast to Coast. So those of you from all over the planet, just hang with us. We'll be back in a moment with John Hogue as we talk about the Hopi prophecy, and you've just heard him talk about the candidates. I'm George Norrie, and we'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Yes, indeed. On our next Coast to Coast program, we've got all kinds of things for you, including, of course, Sir Charles Schulz III talking about the universe. And then we're going to be talking about the UFO agenda as well. So make sure you're part of that program. Hey, I'm going to be in Toronto, Canada this weekend, Saturday, my live stage show event. A few tickets still left if you live out in that area or you want to come in from New York or any place else. Simply go to our website, coasttocoastam.com, look at the highlight reel, or go to georgenorrielive.com. And come on out to Toronto. Plus, we're going to do a meet and greet after the event, so it should be a fun night. We will be back in a moment with your calls and John Hogue on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, welcome back. We're going to go right to the calls now with John Hogue. This half hour will fly by. Nick in Gainesville, Florida. Hey, Nick, go ahead. Nick, you still with us?
Yeah, you there?
There we are. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. John Hogue, you started me out on this journey about 5-6 years ago, I think. I don't know how long ago. And I'm at a place right now. I'd love very much to talk with you more offline. If I can get my information to Ben, I'd appreciate you. And I'm going to read one thing that I wrote down this afternoon. And if you will read it with the idea of the Hopis, with the teaching of the Christian Church, I think you'll hear something in here, okay?
All right, give it a quick shot, Nick. Go ahead.
All right. The gates of hell have been opened. The master has came out with the keys. some of which are being carried by those following him. How did the master get in so much hell? Because the text says he continued to grow in the knowledge and wisdom of God. Anyone here feel me, baby? Oh, yeah. Those that came out with him joined a larger group of teachers or angels, and they held the key, and now all they needed is for the locks to fit the key, because the key will fit the lock.
What do you think of that, John? A little
nice
poetic
metaphor.
There?
A nice metaphor. But the question is, what does the metaphor actually mean? And who is holding the key?
And
how does the mind that wrote that down filter the perception of a vision? All visions of prophecy have to pass through the tea strainer of our mind, our biases, our hopes, our fears, our conditioned cultural responses to the mystery are as varied as there are 300 religions in the world. And so I try to look a little beyond that surface, beyond the language that's adopted as a traditional way to look at things. And it's not just evangelical Christianity or apocalyptic Christianity. It's something that happens in all the religions. They have a certain way to say it, a certain way to identify with it. And the question is, I try to look, as Jesus, I think, meant us to look at every moment, as a small child to be born again, to each moment, with fresh eyes, with a brain washed. I am all for brainwashing, by the way. I'm a very big proponent of it, because
sure.
I don't want a dirty brain. You know, most people, we spend our whole lives having our brains filled full with all kinds of dirt of other people's borrowed ideas, religions, and we're ordered to believe them blindly without question, otherwise we're punished. This kind of garbage that we put into our brains, I think in a real religious practice, one finds a way to wash it moment to moment and be that child born again as that child looking each moment in the eye.
John, as we look at the prophecy and what the Hopis have come up with, they don't really give us too much hope for how it's going to get resolved. Now, you would know this better than I would, but isn't the ending kind of bad for us?
The ending of the old world is bad for those who, in the Hopi prophecies, they talk about how most people would drop dead from their own fear of what's coming. And the indication that it gives to me, and I write about it in more detail in the Essential Hopi Prophecies book, is that the human race is going to divide, is dividing, into two groups. A majority of the human race chooses to hold on to its conditioned reflexes and responses to try to solve these unique challenges of a global society and climate change and a new Cold War with what they know from the past, which is not suited to help them change things for the better. But rather than let go of those things, they'd rather drop dead or commit an act of subconscious auto-suicide than embrace the new, the unknown of the new. There's the other side of the coin are more of a minority of the human race that are ready to embrace change, to step into the unknown, to see that the unknown is not a place of terror. That's all projection from the past. The unknown is unknown. Just like Christopher Columbus under the glow of one of the red blood moons of the 1490s went on his second journey under that glow to discover deeper parts of the New World. Not such a significant step for the Jewish people as John Hagee tried to make it in his book, but a very significant step in what Columbus wanted to do, because a lot of people don't know that Columbus had an idea that he wanted to fulfill prophecy, and by going and discovering a new world, bring the good news of Jesus Christ to all four corners, because that is a necessary first step for all the steps that would come, the reappearance of Israel, the taking back of the Temple Mount, all these things that would come that set one up for the final days. And so, but still, that is just, again, we are following what we understand from how we are conditioned of what the future is supposed to be like. And we must constantly step out, and look again. Be skeptical in the true sense of what skeptical inquiry means. And it's not in the James Randian definition, which is cynicism, which is, I've already judged you as false, and therefore I will cherry-pick all the information to make sure that you actually fit my evidence of you being false at what you're doing. Skeptical inquiry means to investigate without prejudice, for or against. So I ask you all to look at these prophecies and look at them again. And the Hopi, by the way, basically said that the people who can't change will find some way to self-destruct. And the people who can embrace what's coming in the fifth world, which is a very beautiful, balanced, new humanity, that actually engages into a lot of prophecies that I've been collecting over the years that are from what I call rebel prophets. They were historical people who had documented successes, but they ran against the grain of what the general religious views were of how the end and the golden age would be. It was very different from, and that's why they were kind of pushed to the side. But I think those rebel prophets have a better handle on what's coming. And what's coming is a new humanity that will rise out of the chaos of this century, and that will balance itself, see all that's sacred above and below as one, make friends with its objective side and subjective side, create a religion that is equal science of phenomenon and equal science to understand the one who studies phenomenon, and that subjective science is meditation, which is not a religion. It's not a belief system. It's a scientific hypothesis. And like I was saying earlier, the Aquarian Age is about even religious people becoming scientific. And blind belief is not a theory. Blind belief is not something you can question. People will be encouraged to question and doubt, as the word doubt actually means. In Indo-European roots, it means to hover between two possibilities of yes and no. True skeptical inquiry. That is the bridge between the division of the human race into those who will die with the purification. And I think if we don't do anything significant in the next few years to stop global warming, we are definitely going to see a cascade, an avalanche of climate change that once it starts, you just have to ride the avalanche until it runs out of energy. And that could take 20 years.
That's right.
And a lot of people will die from that.
Yep, that's right. Ed in Philadelphia, you're up with us. Go ahead, Ed. Thanks for holding.
Thanks. Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I was wondering if there was two questions I had. One, does the Nostradamus prophecy ever take into account the Ezekiel prophecy in the Old Testament of Russia and Iran joining forces together and attacking Israel, which I believe, like recently, the foreign minister of Iran visited Russia? Second question, since we were talking about presidential candidates this evening, do your impressions ever take into consideration vote fraud? There was a movie called Hacking Democracy about 10 years ago on HBO, and that was done by Bev Harris, who has the Black Box Voting Organization.
Right. One of our guests.
And I believe she was a guest on the show at the time.
Yep, many times, many times.
She describes how the, you know, paperless, ballotless voting machines can be hacked in 3 minutes or less. The final tab results of, you know, the final disk that they put in, or whoever counted the vote last, they erased 10,000 votes and gave 10,000 votes to the other candidate. And I noticed that during the primaries, the last two presidential elections, it seems like the person who was running last always comes out first. John Kerry being an example, and he was with Skull and Bones, as we all know. And he ended up, you know, the candidate, even though he was like last in the polls. And also, Bev Harris said that Romney's votes weren't even counted in the last election, and the TV channels were announcing Obama as the winner, which was really shocking. I'm independent. I've, you know, supported.
Okay, there's a lot of points that I got to get to because you made a lot of very good points. And I'll try to answer them now. Yes, I did see that documentary, and yes, it is it is one of the most important things that your mainstream media, America, is not addressing, is that not only has the Supreme Court taken your democracy away, but the technologies that you're depending on to get a true vote without a paper trail to prove that you actually voted a certain way or not. It's been taken out, and it's very easy. Actually, most of the voter fraud that you're talking about can happen when the Diebold machines get all their information put into a simple laptop, which is then from that laptop that it goes to the records places where the votes are acknowledged. And the ban on that laptop could just very easily change everything. And that's why I say again, despite what you see, and all these people that are going to come up to try to make an alternative voice to what the corporations have decided for you. That's why I see Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton being the choices given to you, because I keep saying follow the money and the powered interests, and that what they can very well easily do is alter the votes so that their people, they'll let you play around with Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump and others, but those are the two that, because they have the money and the power to do what you're saying, they're the ones that are going to be left in the end. Now, the foreign minister did go to Moscow. He goes to Moscow frequently, so it's important to understand that there's a special friendship between Iran and Russia, the Russian Federation. So I would think it's a good thing that he was going there to inform the Russians of what's going to happen, because they have a very important part to play in it. They're part of the UN Security Council that approved this peace offer, as with China and other important players. So I don't project upon that some evil biblical issue from Ezekiel. Now, we don't have time to go into the possibilities of what Ezekiel or Daniel and others actually said. That could be for another show. Maybe
all by itself, John.
By the blood moon of 28th of September, when it looks, if the treaty is not ratified, which I doubt it will be, by the Americans, then we see what the UN does, and it could be the deal breaker, or they'll just move on, and America will be isolated economically and culturally as Europe and China and everybody interact with Iran, and we're left out because of our own inability to, and also it'll be a great devastation to our credibility in the world. And I have heard some people say this, and it's an important thing to say, especially with the economic issues coming up. If America doesn't ratify this treaty, you will see an abandonment of the U.S. dollar in the next year to other currencies, because people will look at this country and say, these people can't do the grand bargain. They can't do the grand negotiation anymore. The president does one thing, his Congress does another.
That's another.
This president, even before he got the peace treaty home, had already a coterie of senators who had pledged that no matter what peace treaty came from Iran, they'll vote against it. About 48 senators. And This is not their job. This is not what they swore to do. The fact that a certain country like Israel can have such an influence on our foreign policy, that even their prime minister can come and speak before the Congress to tell them not to support their president, is uniquely strange in the history of global politics. That that's kind of the nature of our times, and the rest of the world looks at us and says, you guys aren't credible as a superpower anymore. If you can't, that's really coming. I'm telling you that if this ratification doesn't happen, it's going to affect all of you in your pocketbook, because the world is trying to shift away from the dollar-centric world, and it will just speed up.
John, in 30 seconds or less, September, will it be a disaster like some are predicting?
Well, there's certainly a lot of talk about a lot of economic angst in the papers and in the... But I think it's not going to... It's going to be... It's like when somebody has a defibrillator, and the defibrillator is made of quantitative easing, and you keep pumping, and it looks like the heart of the economy is beating, and in September, the Fed is going to have to take the defibrillator off the chest and see if it really beats on its own, and they're going to find that the heartbeat is not that good. They'll start putting the defibrillator on again, pouring more fiat money into it, and then delay this disaster until next year.
It'll be a problem indeed. John, would you give out your website for us, please?
My website is hogueprophecy.com. That's H-O-G-U-E, prophecy.com.
Very good. And the book, of course, Predictions for the Last Blood Moon, Amazon.com.
Central Hopi Prophecies.
You got it. Thank you, John. It's always good talking with you. We'll see how some of these things truly unfold. For Jeff DeRay, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Ben Haley, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Laudasur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borles, and George Knapp. I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.